listening to the Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Good afternoon, Sue. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm fine. Weather's really horrible out there,
though. It's lovely, isn't it?
Driving up the motorway, the windscreen wipers are on double speed. Yeah. All the lorries spray. It's horrible.
No snow yet, though.
I don't think it. Do you think it's going to be snow?
No, it's too wet. It's too rainy.
It's too mild, I think. So, yes, not a very nice day, but we do have a very good programme. That's the main thing. So we've got Troy Linton, who's going to, we're going to speak to him on the phone in about 10 minutes. So that should be good. And he's got a product called Coco Shot. So we're going to try that as well live.
Absolutely. I've got some cheesy tunes for him as well.
I bet you have. And we're joined in the studio by Sasha Celestial One. And yes, we are going to ask how she got that name. Sasha Celestial One. And she's got a really good concept as well. But around food waste, we're seeing a lot of that at the moment. It's a big thing that's concerning a lot of people.
She's been looking in my fridge, has she?
Probably,
I had a big clear out last night.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What a waste.
I know.
And then a few weeks ago, I did a pre-record with Adrian Boswell at Selfridges. He's a buyer at Selfridges, and he offers lots of really good advice if you're trying to get into a really good sort of retail place like Selfridges. And we were going to play that last week, but we had such a packed programme.
It was manic, wasn't it?
Yeah, we've had to delay it to this week, but it's a really good interview, so that's great. Before we talk to Troy on the phone, been to the gym recently, Paul?
The gym? Mm. Oh, yeah.
Have you? No, really, have you? No. Don't you have a personal trainer? Do you have a personal trainer?
Bird. Yeah, Bird is my personal trainer, but my orders to Bird when she started looking after me was no physical stuff, Bird.
That is the point of having a personal trainer. So she doesn't take you to the gym, Bird?
She tries, but I don't go.
No, don't go. Okay, so I go to the gym like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a week. And you get lots of these vending machines there.
Mm-hmm.
And then people carrying these drinks in their hands. And that's like Gatorade. You know,
Lucozade, yeah.
Powerade, all those sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a real big thing now.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you call it Gatorade?
I call it Gatorade.
I think it's Gatorade.
But I can never
pronounce it. That is the number one world sports drink. Can you believe that?
Yeah, but it's highly tied into the NFL, isn't it?
So it's owned by PepsiCo.
Yeah.
And the National Football League, which is the American football, isn't it? They're one of the sponsors.
Yeah.
And would you believe that they partner with Barcelona, AC Milan, Arsenal, Liverpool? You might have heard of them. Probably not, because you're a Chelsea supporter.
Minor football team.
So it's really huge. And they've got all these they in 1991, they signed up Michael Jordan. That must have been an amazing marketing budget. And at the moment, they've got Usain Bolt endorsing it.
Right.
Goodness knows how much that costs.
Because a lot of these drinks are supposed to be energy-giving drinks, aren't they, to boost your performance. But you've also got the high-energy drinks, things like Red Bull, which are just, you know, massive amounts of caffeine.
Yeah, I'm not sure Red Bull's high energy. I just think it is caffeine and sugar, probably.
Exactly. And the worst one of all, which is Caribou, if you've ever tasted that.
What is that? Aren't they those people who sponsor Chelsea?
Yeah, they are, yeah.
They're on their shirts, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, that's
what
right.
What is it then?
It's an energy drink, and it's an equivalent to Red Bull, but it is horrible.
Are you allowed to say that on air? You're probably going to get sued.
I don't care. It is the most horrible drink I've ever tried. It tastes really horrible. It's so obviously big.
It must cost them a fortune to be a shirt sponsor in the Premier League.
It's really popular. They're a Southeast Asian producer, and it's really popular there. And they sell loads and loads and loads of it. It's just, I don't think it's got the right taste for a Western palate. That's all.
Right, okay.
I think that's the problem with it.
But it's all over the Chelsea shirts, is it? I'll have
it's
look
all
at
over the shirts, but
but nobody's buying it in the stand.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
So just going back to this sort of Gatorade, for example, you know, they've got Usain Bolt, Serena Williams, Lionel Messi. Must be costing them a fortune. When I was a kid, there was only like Lucozade, and Lucozade actually was when you were ill.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I don't know,
you had tonsillitis or something, you weren't allowed to go to school, and you couldn't eat anything because all your throat was swollen. So your mum used to chuck Lucozade down you, and that was it.
Yeah, it's just fizzy glucose, isn't it?
That's what I thought it used to be, but now it's a bit of a science. So, so what they're supposed to do is when you sweat, which obviously you don't because you don't do any exercise,
sweat.
But when you sweat, you lose fluids and you lose carbohydrates and you lose electrolytes. What are they, you say?
Blimey.
Well, they're things such as sodium, potassium, chloride and all that sort of stuff. And what these bottles try and do is they try and replicate your body's fluids, the makeup of your body's fluids, so that when you exercise quite a lot, that you're immediately replacing that. And I've done a little bit of research on this today. Well, it's not me, actually. It's the lovely Harry upstairs. Shouldn't really take the credit, should I? And all the sort of science says that, to be honest, if you're exercising heavily for more than 90 minutes, is probably what you need. You know, really sweating profusely, so you're like a professional
sports
person.
Sorry, you've lost me now completely.
Yeah, I've never heard of that at all.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah. We're on uncharted territory there.
But it's like my gym session would be about 50, 55 minutes. I just drink water. It's absolutely fine because you don't reach that point where you need that stuff replenishing unless you're really doing an extended session. And then you probably need to do that. And sports nutrition drinks is what they're called. They're really popular now in the UK. And apparently 24% of us, so that's like one in four, have consumed a sports nutrition product in the past 3 months.
Really?
So they're getting, I know you haven't, but I mean, they're really, you know, it's a really big thing.
Wow.
And apparently we spend £66 million on it.
Wow.
Every year. I mean, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, in general, aren't they very high in calories as well?
Yeah, so I think the great thing.
That's why I don't touch it.
Yeah, great thing when we get Troy on the phone because he's trying to come up with something that's slightly different but does the same thing. Mm. And quite often a normal bottle of this stuff contains 120 calories. It's got 29 grams of carbohydrates, but the carbohydrates are actually 3/4 of that sugar.
Right.
So it's a bit of a, I won't say a con, but it's a bit disingenuous really to say it's carbohydrate. And 75 milligrams of salt. And they've got sweeteners and colourings, and some of them are really bright in colour, like bright blue.
Yeah,
I'm sure that can't be very good for you. Mm. But they're really, really popular. I mean, hugely popular.
Wow.
So it's a big thing. So it'll be interesting to see how Troy's going to try and come up with something a bit more natural. Looking at Sasha, I'll turn to you, Sasha, because I'm not going to get anything out of Paul. Are you a gym bunny?
I am
exercise?
A gym bunny. Yes,
you do?
I am.
So do you use any sort of... I mean, I just take a water thing with me. I don't know about you.
I just use water. And then on Saturdays, I like to buy coconut water because I love coconut water. But like Paul said, I'm a little scared of the calories and the sports drinks. I'm a bit like,
I just worked out
and then now I'm going to have a sports drink. So I'm net zero.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I might just as well stay at home, yeah.
I spent £2.50.
You see,
I have the same problem.
No, you don't, Paul.
Yeah, no, I do. When I used to go to the gym, I'd work out and then I'd have a fry-up because I was hungry afterwards.
Yeah, but you have a fry-up anyway. So it's
true.
Probably better
true,
that you go
true,
to the gym,
true.
To be honest.
True. Okay.
So, all right then. So should we have a little bit of music on while we're just trying to get Troy on the phone?
Yeah, I've got some cheesy tunes just for Troy. Do you think he'll like this?
I hope he's listening.
Kick your ale and the coconuts, obviously.
Oh, of course it is.
Mama was insane.
Coconuts.
Oh, Kid Creole and the Coconuts there, especially for Troy.
Especially for Troy. Just coming back to before we come to you, Troy. Sasha, you were saying that in America, it's I've just been calling it Gatorade. What is it called?
Gatorade.
Okay, so we're
it's
just
from
having,
Florida.
Yeah, so we're just having a little discussion about Gatorade and obviously all the stuff that's in that. Troy, you're trying to produce something, I guess, which is a little bit of a rival to those, to that, aimed at sports people, but not using all that sugar and colouring. Is that a fair assessment of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I guess it's a fair assessment. And by the way, thank you very much for the opportunity to be live on your show. This is absolutely
pleasure.
Awesome. So thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Appreciate it very much. It's a great question. The thing is, Gatorade is in a completely different category, in my mind anyway. Gatorade, you know, as you mentioned, is very high in sugar, right? Very high in sugar, and operates a little bit differently than CocoShot. CocoShot is mixed with natural ingredients, right? Natural powder mixed with water and without any added sugar whatsoever. There is naturally occurring sugar, you know, from the coconut water powder, and also red beetroot has that as well, but nothing added. So completely different than that. And what CocoShot does, I think, over Gatorade is, and I don't have the, you know, the potassium specifics in front of me from Gatorade, but potassium is a main ingredient in CocoShot because that's coming from the coconut water mineral powder itself.
So is that a natural is that a natural part of it, Troy, or something that you add to it?
Yeah, exactly, Paul. The potassium, or I should say the coconut water mineral powder, is the foundation of CocoShot, okay? Mm-hmm. And within coconut water mineral powder, you have in our product, in the 11-gram sachet, which is a nice, beautiful food dose, you have 300 milligrams of potassium. And what that gives you is the opportunity on a legal level, as far as a label claim goes, is to say that it does balance muscle function and your nervous system. And what I mean by the muscle function is you need potassium in order to create muscle contractions.
Troy, that Gatorade has 37 milligrams of potassium. So you literally have 10 times more.
Thank you very much.
That's right.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you very much. Yeah, so that it's exactly the point, is that it's really comparing apples to oranges when we're talking about Gatorade versus our product.
Sorry, it's always difficult when you're on the phone because I can't see you. But let me just describe your product before we go any further. So we've got two sachets in front of us, and they're the sort of square sachets, and it's a powder. Inside this, I've got the vanilla cinnamon one, and it's got apple fiber, wheatgrass, red beetroot, carrot, ginseng, and this particular one's got vanilla bean and cinnamon. So
that sounds like a vegan feast.
Well, it's not just the coconut, Paul. That's the point. It's all this stuff, and it is a powder. Yeah. And then presumably you can put that in a smoothie or in water or something, Troy.
Yes, exactly. The intention of it really is for it to be mixed with water. And we have three different versions. You have two in front of you there, but we have the original, which was introduced 3 years ago, which is coconut water, mineral powder, apple, wheatgrass, red beetroot, carrot, Siberian ginseng. So that's what you have in the original introduced 3 years ago. 4 months ago, we introduced two more versions because we listened to our customers. And some folks, which you'll get a kick out of, didn't particularly care so much for the red beetroot flavor. So it's one of those kind of Marmite in this country. You like or you don't. So we found that we listened to our customers and said, okay, what can we do to actually equal the therapeutic value, but also take the edge off of the red beetroot. So we added in one of the versions vanilla cinnamon, and then in the third version we've added cacao, so for chocolate lovers, and also for extra therapeutic value. So we do have three different versions. Yes.
Well, I'm going to have to tell Harry off, our lovely researcher guy, because he hasn't provided us with the cocoa one, has he, Paul?
No, he hasn't.
No, we've got the other one in front of us.
That was our fault.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. But we've got these other ones, so I'm going to have a taste of those in a minute. Who are the target audience? Because having a really interesting conversation with Sasha just a minute ago while we were off air, she was saying that what Gatorade are trying to do is people are demonising fruit juice at the moment a little bit with children because they're saying there's too much, sugar in there.
Yep.
They're also saying you can't have fizzy pop, Coke and all that sort of stuff because that's naughty for you.
Yeah.
And Gatorade have probably spotted this. And, she's saying that 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds are really going for Gatorade and stuff like that because somehow it's in the middle and it's allowed. Mm. But what's your target audience? I presume yours isn't aimed at children quite so much.
Excellent question. Yeah, it's not geared towards children. The Coca Shot initially was introduced really for a target audience of, I call it kind of a proper, and I say this in the nicest way because I also follow that, kind of a tree hugger type of audience where you embrace the environment, you embrace natural products, and you live by them. And what that means is that you don't add any extra other naughty, nasty ingredients to it, and really, that's what this all started off of. Saying I want to introduce some ingredients that will actually help. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that will help with sports, right? So folks that are sports enthusiasts, if you will, also folks with active lifestyles. So typically, this is for adults, and with food supplements, because this is a food supplement. You tend to have folks taking this or consuming food supplements that are 16, 17 years or older.
I see. We were just again talking earlier that these are very popular, these sorts of things in gyms now. So people who are working out. I mean, why would you go to all that effort and then all of a sudden you're shoving a load of sugar in your body? It doesn't actually make any sense, does it really? Or too much salt. I believe there is an audience there.
Totally. And the thing is that in I guess you'll laugh about this, but in defense a little bit to sugar is that, in some cases, if you're doing an ultra, and if there are, other nutritionists that are listening to this, is that there's a time and place for everything. And if you're doing a marathon, you're doing incredibly intense exercises, you're going to need, or it's advisable to have some glucose, right, in your system to actually balance your and to support your cells, seriously. However, when we're talking the most of the population who don't run marathons, right, who will run 2 kilometers, 3 kilometers, go to the gym for an hour, or even 2 hours. CocoShot is absolutely perfect for that,
yeah,
because it does have naturally occurring sugar in there, right, to help with energy. And it, but what it doesn't have is tons of added sugar. So, for instance, Gatorade, again, I have a computer in front of me, but I'm not even going to bring it. I'm not even going to, if you have the information in front of you, it'd be awesome. But my guess is in a big bottle of Gatorade, there are probably 150 calories, something like that, probably 25 grams.
120, you're not far off.
Okay, so there you go. So 120.
Yeah.
Okay. So in this, with CocoShot, you mix it with water. There's 11 grams of powder, which again, guys, is a food dose. So we're not talking two-piece hard shell capsules where you get 500 milligrams, which is a half a gram, right, which to give you an idea and your listeners, a half a gram or 500 milligrams is basically a tip of a teaspoon, mm, all right? So CocoShot is 11 grams of tablespoon, a heaping tablespoon, and you pour and mix that into a glass of 300 mils or 400 milliliters of water. And it creates a nice homogeneous, the original one's a little grittier, right, than the vanilla, cinnamon, and the cacao, which I'll send you guys later.
Thank you.
But it's a nice taste, and it does give you the energy. It does give you the energy with the little amount of, I guess, naturally occurring sugar that you have from the coconut water mineral powder and the red beetroot, but doesn't give you, obviously, this big old spike that you do get from sugar,
yeah,
and then also the other insulin and side effects you get from sugar that it can create all kinds of nasty problems. So there
absolutely
you go.
Now, I've also been looking on your website, and you're saying, I'm really quite interested in this, you will create,
yeah,
new formulations to customers' specifications. So you can say, you know, I don't know, I'm a weightlifter and I do this or I do that or whatever it is, and you'll presumably go, oh, I'll have a look at it, see if we can help you with that. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so what we do is CocoShot is our brand, but what we can do is we can also create. So if you folks, if you guys wanted your own brand, we would certainly help you create that as well. So if you want it in sachets and tubs and capsules. Absolutely, would love to help you.
I see. Are you saying it's like white labeling it, Troy?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, you could do that. But CocoShot's not. That's our brand.
Yeah, sure.
But
yeah,
as a side, yes, we could help create other formulas and possibly a little bit similar to CocoShot,
sure,
or other food supplement products.
Yep, got it.
Okay, well, that's all very interesting. Can I just ask a little bit about your background? And I know you studied economics at the University of South Florida, which is really interesting because Sasha's economics, yep, trained as well here, sitting here, so that's a bit
odd.
Oh,
great.
having studied all that sort of financial side, what led you into doing this? Something you're passionate about?
Yes. Gosh, it was probably early 90s. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, in the upper great Midwest of America. And I went to school in Florida. And after school, meaning university, after majoring in economics, I wanted to get into the natural food industry is what it's called. And I didn't know kind of where I wanted to be, but I wanted to get into that because I just wanted, I was fascinated by that even back then, about what it could do and the benefits of taking food supplements or anything natural for that matter. So I originally started in the homeopathy sector, which we won't get totally into because that's a whole other conversation. But homeopathy is a type of medicine other than, you know, you have ibuprofen, which is allopathic medicine, which means allo means against, and homeopathy it means like-minded medicine. So I got into to that side of the industry in the early 90s, and then which led me into the food supplement side, vitamins and minerals, and now I'm currently studying to be a nutritional therapist. So I've been in marketing and sales, for 24 years in this industry, and I've always in my head said, I want to know the guts of how all of this is working, and I'm going to do it. And I finally have taken the plunge so for the last year and a half I've been studying the guts of, almost literally, guys, the guts of, of nutrition and what it does to the gut and what it does to the rest of your body. And it's absolutely fascinating.
Well, I think this also, we are getting strong vibes at the moment. This is going to be the new food trend immensely, and that people are going to start looking at how whatever it is they have is affecting their gut. And that's coming across quite strongly. And Craig Sands was saying that, wasn't he, from Green and Blackpool, that's going to be the next food trend.
Yep.
Well, that's really...
It is. You guys are spot on.
Yeah. It's really, really great to hear from you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And Cocoa Shot, where can we get it?
Holland & Barrett.
It's
available
Good
old in
Holland
most Holland & Barrett stores in the UK. But if it's not in your local Holland & Barrett store, you can go on their beautiful e-commerce site and buy it from
there. Buy it direct. Excellent. Okay, then. Thank you very much. Have a good day, Troy.
Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you again.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
That's funny, that, because you studied economics as well. And
in Chicago, actually.
In Chicago, how weird.
Which is where Troy's from.
Yeah, so it must be, I don't know, is it? It's very interesting, though, because I think if you are going to be an entrepreneur and you're going to do whatever it is, food or whatever, you've got to really understand something, haven't you, about business and how that works, and otherwise it's really going to be an uphill struggle.
I think it's very helpful, or recognize what you don't know and find a partner who can support you in that area
and fill those gaps that you don't
someone
have.
Someone sort of needs to understand the basics.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we've got before we go on to you, Sasha, and your stuff, which is hugely interesting. Shall we just have a quick play of Adrian Boswell's
pop over to
interview?
Selfridges, see what I got.
Yeah, and obviously Selfridges, there's that lovely program that's been on the television, isn't it, on and off, this series. Very great history of Selfridges.
Yeah.
We've obviously had Fortnum & Masons as well.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see what Adrian says.
I do believe Gordon Selfridge was American as well, was he not?
Was he?
Yes, I think he
I
was.
I remember that.
I think he was, although his only store was in Oxford Street, but I do believe Gordon was American, so
it's a huge store.
We're continuing with the theme.
Yeah, if you've ever been to the food section at Selfridges, it is incredible. Definitely worth a visit.
Yeah,
should we hear from Adrian?
Let's hear from him.
I'm with Adrian Boswell, who's a buyer for Selfridges, and I've managed to persuade Adrian to give me all his top tips if you know, you're trying to get your stuff into Selfridges or any other amazing shop, really. What Adrian and buyers like Adrian are looking for. Adrian, just tell me, what is it you're responsible for at Selfridges? So, I mean, obviously buyers have their specialisms, don't they? What are you responsible for?
So I'm currently looking after our fresh food departments, which is predominantly anything that's behind the counter. So we're talking about cheese, deli, your cooked hams, your cooked meats, your cured meats, salamis, fresh pasta. And then I look after some of our fresh food concessions, which are, you know, so like butchers, wet fish.
What don't you look after? I mean, goodness me, that's a huge amount. And do you just taste food all day? Why are you not hugely fat?
Well, no, we don't taste food all day. And there is a rule that you don't always have to swallow.
No.
But yeah, I don't look after anything that's ambient stable. I don't look after anything that's in a pre-packed chilling either. So confectionery, grocery, you've got a chilled area, which is about juices and butters. I don't look after anything which is more sort of a grab-and-go product. Even.
So I've got some amazing cheese, or I've got a deli product. What is it the absolute number one rule first that is the gate for you before you even look at anything else?
Quality, absolutely. Flavour profile, texture, very high on the agenda. If it doesn't taste in line or as good as a lot of the other products we sell and what we believe our customers would expect, then that's the number one starting point, actually.
I guess for Selfridges, it's your brand as well, isn't it? Because it's about reputation, and you cannot possibly afford to have anything that's not really up to standard.
Absolutely. That's exactly where it comes from, and we have to work very hard to ensure that the quality of the products that we bring to our customers at a level that they've expect, and it matches the reputations that's been built for over 100 years, since 1909. And, of course, we are fundamentally very different to what you can get in a supermarket, and that's how we need to stay.
So the flavour is everything. What about the way it looks, or for example, the smell and all that sort of stuff? Do you take that into account, and maybe the packaging?
Yes, I mean, I guess when I say quality, it encompasses all of those underlying subcategories almost, which is flavour, texture, aroma, and then again, where the look is concerned, it depends on the product. If it's going to sit on a shelf or in a chiller, then the packaging and the branding comes into play. And is that in line with what we currently have? Is it cutting edge? Is it new on the market? Or, I mean, again, if it's a cheese is a cheese to a certain degree, obviously. Some of the things, we tend not to have wax cheeses behind the counter. We tend not to have lots of cheeses that have been vacuum packed and that sort of stuff. So a lot of cloth bounds and a lot of natural looking cheeses. You know, a cook time is a cook time. We obviously, we will try. There is an element of it looking a specific way in terms of the type of cooked meat or ham it might be, or salami or cured ham. There are some things. So we're, from that point of view, is the level of fat versus meat, is that on point, etc., etc. So.
And in terms of packaging, do you have any advice? Should you do packaging that is really off the wall and different and stand out, or should it just look very plain and classy? What sort of stuff are you looking for at Selfridges?
Packaging is
I guess you're going to say it depends, aren't you?
I am going to say it depends. I'm going to say it's a very difficult one because it does depend on the type of product you have. It then comes down to, again, what you're trying to achieve for your brand and your range. I think the major difficulty that a lot of the startups and the young companies that are coming through have is that some of them have great stories, and there's a lot of there's a big educational piece that needs to happen. Is how do they harness all of that information that they need to pass on to the customer and get it into some packaging which is short and sharp. It's a very difficult one, but yeah, packaging plays a huge part. There are some brands which are quite minimal, where you can see actually a lot of the products, and it's easy for the customer to grasp the information because I guess the story that they're trying to bring is a simple one.
And then my final question, really, and I've got a bit of a bugbear about this. What are your views on vacuum packing, particularly, in my view, on meat?
Vacuum packing from a retail point of view, as in a retail pack vac-packed, I try to stay clear of it. I'm quite old school in terms of how I think meats and cheeses should be wrapped and handled. Obviously, in the day and age we live in, where, you know, a lot of people want the quality, they want the product, and they want it conveniently, vacuum packing gives you the shelf life, and it also protects some of the producers from that point of view. But there's a new trend which the Italians have sort of been leading the way on, which is to gash for us the packaging. And for me, that is definitely the best way to go. When you open it, you don't get the slices sticking together, and it's a nuisance and all that sort of stuff. So, I agree. It's a bugbear of mine as well. I'm with you.
Excellent. I'm so pleased about this. Ban that and get some new technology. Adrian Boswell from Selfridges, a great buyer, and I love walking around that store. It's fab, isn't it? Just as a sort of theme park or food, really. But thank you very much for all your advice.
Thank you as well.
There you go.
I hate that vacuum packing. It's so brilliant in terms of, say, keeping stuff fresh, but it makes the product look so awful, especially meat for me, because it makes when blood comes out of meat, and you can't help that if it's been there for a couple of days, it just makes it look
It makes it look like one of those snow things that you get in there where it flobbles around the packet. Yeah.
And I'd say if we are looking at technology, that there is real room for some real innovation around how do we make some cheese look amazing and yet still have some packaging that really helps. And I was in Neil's Yard Dairy the other week, and they flush water, so it's almost like being in a cave when you go in there, because what they say is that cheese degrades more because it's gets dried out than the temperature. So it doesn't matter so much whether it's cold or hot. It's the having the sort of liquid in the air. You know, that really counts. So there must be some packaging we can get where you can really preserve cheese, you know, in such a way, or, you know, meat in such a way that it looks great, but it's still keeping it for as long as possible.
It's got to be the big innovation, hasn't it? Because food preservation is one of the things that causes so much problem, because people in the past have used chemicals to preserve food and E-numbers and all the things that have made food bad for us, so that processed food becomes, you know, the kind of stuff that everybody says you shouldn't eat, which is a shame.
But there's got to be a way now of putting all that energy into packaging to prevent food waste. Mm. Now, I don't know if you see what I did there, Paul.
I was impressed there. So I was impressed how you wrote that link straight in.
Straight in there to food waste, which is what Sasha's here for to some extent.
Yeah.
We've done loads and loads of food waste statistics on here, so I'm not going to repeat those. I found two new things about food waste, which actually made me think about it in a very different way. And this is from Sasha's website. An area larger than China is used to grow food that is never eaten.
It doesn't surprise me.
And that's not about packaged food. That's about, you know. What? And worse than that, 25% of the world's fresh water supply is used to grow food that's never eaten.
Mm.
And that's a really interesting way of looking at it because water is going to be the new thing everybody's going to fight over in the future.
And it's interesting as well because we're in the West are the biggest culprits of wasting food.
Mm.
And I'm a big culprit of that too. You know, interesting. I went to my fridge last night and I've got, in the bottom of the fridge, it's the salad drawer type thing.
You have stuff in there then?
Oh, yeah.
What salad in there? What, do you just look at it?
No. I have bags of vegetables, fresh vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
But I got the vegetables out to cook, and the bag of vegetables, which consisted of carrots, broccoli, cauliflower and beans or something, but the carrots had gone mushy. So
ruined everything.
It ruined everything, so I had to throw the whole bag away. And it was only a week past its sell-by date.
Sasha, don't take any notice of him because you'll die. So, hi, Sasha.
Hello.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking to us all the way through the programme. Before we do anything, though, your name is Sasha Celestial One, as in Celestial hyphenated One, as in O
N E.
N E as in a number. Please tell me where all that came from.
That is my last name, and my parents gave it to me. They were, I guess, for lack of a better word, really big hippies.
I was going to be really rude and go, I bet they were hippies, but you beat me to it.
No, they were just big hippies. They wanted to, as far as they knew, Sasha was a brand new name too. They obviously hadn't done much research and wanted to give me a name that would be completely unique. So there it is. I've stuck with it.
Is there another one in the world? Sasha Celestial.
Not that I found. I think I'd be a bit scared if I found.
Yeah, that'd be
found
weird.
Another one.
That'd be weird. And actually, the way you were brought up with your parents and your parents' philosophy is actually quite important, isn't it? Though I know we're teasing you at the moment, but it's really quite important.
It is, and it's really part of what has motivated me. I sort of think it has come full circle to work on Oleo. As a child, we sort of grew up in an environment without a lot of spare money at all. And by necessity, but out of principle, I spent a lot of time with my parents who really tried to source as much as possible secondhand. So all of my clothing and our furniture, and I hated it as a kid. I absolutely hated it. I want brand new shiny things. But and I sort of left the nest and went off and had a career in the corporate world and banking and consulting. But I always felt a little bit like a fish out of water, which was actually easy to spot with my last name, sort of floating around on corporate letterhead.
I'd love to have seen that. Business cards. Can you remember the graphic design department? What? Somebody put this in as a joke. Yeah. No, it's her name. No, it's not.
It was exactly like that, actually. And then when this opportunity came about to work on Oleo, it really did feel a bit like coming home because it's something food waste and waste in general is something that I'm really passionate about.
I also think there's a lot written about recycling and all that sort of stuff. And but there is something to be said very much about reusing, repurposing, upcycling. And I presume with your background, that's ingrained too.
It is. Everywhere I go, I see things that have been discarded by other people who don't value them anymore, and I see value in those items. And I have to restrain myself from collecting it all and taking it home and either, you know, fixing it or giving it away to someone who I know would appreciate it. And my friends have often teased me because I am that kind of person who walks down the street and sees, you know, this is a real example, one of many sort of pair of jeans that obviously just need a wash and then they'll fit my 4-year-old. And I have no idea why they're on the street, but clearly they shouldn't be thrown away. And he doesn't know any better. So why not pick them up and make use of them?
Yeah.
And that's just my mentality.
Absolutely. And you started Oleo with Tessa Cook. And although you met in 2002 and you had this idea bubbling away for quite a while, it wasn't until very recently that you got going.
Yes, I mean, full credit to Tessa, really. It was her idea that was born out of a personal experience that she had. She was moving back from abroad. She was living abroad for her work. And she had some food that she wasn't going to be able to eat before the movie men packed everything up. She tried desperately to give it away, and was very disappointed when she couldn't do so. And she ended up sort of smuggling some of the vegetables into her suitcase or packing boxes to prevent them from going to waste.
Yeah.
And at that time, she knew that there should be a simpler way, because obviously there were people within walking distance of her in Geneva, where she was at the time, that would have been delighted to have the food. They just didn't know each other. And with mobile technology and push notifications and GPS and all of the sort of modern technology that we're so familiar with today, that's the kind of problem that could be, it's just a communications problem that could be easily overcome.
I mean, I have to say, with neighbours, if I'm going on holiday and I haven't quite used up stuff, and that includes flowers and things like that, you know, somebody's given me some lovely flowers and they've still got a good couple of days in them. I do think there is a thing when people know each other, they do tend to go down the street, like, I'm going on holiday, can you take these tomatoes? Can you do this? Can you do that?
See, I do something quite similar to that. I go next door to my neighbours and I go, listen, I'm not going on holiday again. You haven't got any steak and chips you want to get rid of.
Yeah, that won't happen. So I do think there is a little bit of a mindset, because wasting it feels terrible, food, particularly when it's okay to be eaten.
We did some research that showed that a little over 1 in 3 people, and this was backed up by a YouGov poll, feel basically physical pain when they have to let go or throw away food that was or recently was edible. It's just not how our species evolved. It just doesn't make any sense.
And it isn't just, this happens, I live on my own, so it happens to me quite a lot.
I'm not surprised there, Paul.
That's not fair,
well done,
is it?
Yeah. See, my guests are beginning to be on my side. They're really getting it.
Of course, you have to buy food in the way they package it. Yeah. And I like to buy fresh food. I don't like to buy meals for one and microwave meals. So I buy fresh salad and fresh vegetables and fresh meat. But of course, if you don't eat it like straight away, then bang, it's gone. And there's only me to eat it and I can't eat it all. But when I have to throw this stuff away, it isn't just the cost. It's the emotional thing of going...
I'm not fussed when there's a meal that I've cooked and then I've not eaten it all.
Yeah.
Because it's a mess, and what can you do with it? If I can freeze it, I will.
Yeah,
but
sure.
If you can't, you know, that's fine. But there is something about throwing fresh food away, isn't there? That's the thing, and it's the guilt, I think, to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, plate waste
is called plate waste.
Yeah, waste is in sort of a different category altogether. But the food, the what we're really targeting with Olio, which if it's not clear, is an app that allows people to take a picture of their food, upload it to the app, and then it alerts all of their neighbors nearby that there's food available. But food that you just don't get around to eating in time, for whatever reason, you have a change of plans or change of preference, or maybe food that's given to you that you really don't want but you accept out of politeness. And letting that kind of food that's still perfectly edible go to waste does just feel a bit criminal.
Yeah.
And I think that we're hardwired as humans to feel that way, despite the fact that for most of us, food is relatively inexpensive. So a packet of vegetables might only be a quid.
Yeah, exactly.
But the pain associated with throwing that away far exceeds, you know, losing a pound.
Yeah.
Let's just describe your app in a bit more detail. So you're asking people to join the food sharing revolution.
Woo-hoo.
It's a free app. Mm-hmm. And essentially what it does is connect neighbours with each other, but also with local shops, which I think is interesting, so that surplus food and other items can be shared rather than thrown away. And there's a counter on your website that I've been having a look at. And at the time of writing, about 113,000 users have managed to save just short of 200,000 items of food, you know, which is an incredible achievement. Well done, Sasha,
because
that's food that, you know. When you see now, though, food banks, Paul, and also there's lots of collection points in supermarkets now, isn't there, saying put some of your food in there, and people feel okay doing that and they want to do that.
Yeah.
Surely this is an even better way of doing it, don't you think? It's got loads
of applications. Well, I think it's very complementary is what I would say. You know, food banks serve a purpose, and they're serving a certain vulnerable portion of the population who are food insecure, and it's often with non-perishable items. Whereas Olio is for everyone, whether you're sort of rich, poor, hungry, not hungry, it doesn't matter.
It's not the point. Yeah.
It's not the point. Absolutely, and we sort of need the more people to participate, the better, because then there's more liquidity in the marketplace for surplus food in technical terms. But yes, you're correct in describing the app. neighbor to neighbor, let's say some common use cases might be that you had a dinner party and you've got leftover catering or maybe extra cake from a birthday party, gifts, unwanted gifts, especially around the holidays.
Cake is the thing.
Cake.
Chocolate oranges.
Somebody comes and brings you a cake and I don't really like cake. Mm. And it's rude to say
this time of the year, a lot of people are trying to have a change of diet, and removing temptation from the cupboards is a first step. Mm. So you just, make it someone else's problem, really. But the truth is that anytime you've got food that you're not interested in eating, for whatever reason, it's very likely there's someone nearby who would be delighted to have it.
Because they're just off to go and buy some. So why go and buy some if somebody's going to swap it for you?
Yeah.
Mm. And the implications, we won't get, and we've got plenty of time to get philosophical, but the implications of sort of sourcing some food that would have gone to waste from a neighbor rather than purchasing new food at scale are hugely transformational when you start to think about some of those statistics you mentioned at the top of the segment, because that would mean that collectively we can demand less food, which means less food goes to waste, and also less the resources that went into growing that food, the water and the land, go to waste as well.
Sure.
And what happens if I have an allotment? I really like growing vegetables because I come from London. I didn't used to have a garden, so it's still like a bit of magic to me. And I love courgette plants because they're amazing. So you pick some courgettes, which I love, eat them all week.
Yep.
I go there, there's no courgettes like 7 days beforehand, and now all of a sudden there's another 10. Getting rid of that is and it's beautiful stuff. It's, this, in essence, it's organic and it's really fresh. Could you do it for that as well, not just
Absolutely. That is sort of the purest use case for the app. Homegrown vegetables are very attractive. There's so many people who don't have access to an allotment or to a garden, but who would love to have access to homegrown fruit and veg. When we did our research, 93% of the people we surveyed said they would be willing to walk 10 or 15 minutes to collect homegrown fruit or veg. It's very desirable. And then obviously it solves a problem for the person who's growing it, because they're trying to give it
glut.
Away to
it's
all of their neighbors
glut,
and colleagues, and there's still more than they can eat. So
say I've got these courgettes and I want to make them available. I open the app on my phone. I take a photo of it, I presume, add a photo, describe it. This is me. I've just grown homegrown. This. It's in my little allotment up there. And then you don't charge people for it. It's free. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And then when and where the item is available for pickup. So I say, I'm only in after 5:30 at night or something. And then people presumably can just browse, say that they'd like it, and then you just message each other or something.
Is it a bit like Grindr?
Grindr.
Grindr. So you go swipe left if you don't like courgettes.
No.
Swipe right if you like cucumbers. No?
I think it's Tinder.
Yeah. Someone did say we put the 10 in Tinder.
All right. Okay.
So it is a bit like Tinder. Yeah. In that it's a marketplace, and it's a hyper-local marketplace, so it's geographically bound.
Right.
And you're correct in describing how you would add an item. It's very straightforward and intuitive. It is only on smartphones right now, Windows and Android, but we're building a web version right now, so people with a desktop can use it soon, and also people on Windows phones, so that it's fully inclusive. But the key sort of, it's very simple, but what really makes it work is that when you add something, it automatically notifies people within a certain geographic distance of you.
Excellent.
So you'll get an alert saying a new
Sue's got courgettes up there again.
Exactly.
Yes.
And then if you see something you want, you simply send a message. And we have a lot of things to try and make it as easy as possible. Like you can pre-populate. Hi, is this still available?
Yeah.
And you just arrange for private collection. Mm. Some people in the beginning are a bit hesitant about a sort of stranger-to-stranger collection. We do have a whole network of drop boxes that are hosted at cafes and shops around the country. So you could drop your courgettes off in the local drop box. But the reality is people join Olio because they either hate food waste or they love free food.
So it's a community anyway.
It's the community element that keeps you coming back, because it's a very unusual sort of way to meet people in your community.
Yeah.
If you like courgettes and I like courgettes, even if we have nothing else in common, we probably have something in common, and it's just nice to meet on the doorstep.
Mm. The other thing for me is that there's a lot of socially isolated people who are quite lonely, particularly elderly or whatever.
Yep.
This is a great way to maybe have contact with an older person, but it not impinge on your life because you're busy and you don't want that to be intrusive. But surely that's a really good connector.
It's it's one of the things that has surprised us and also delighted us the most is how much people are appreciating the community element. Yeah. And also when we look at the diversification of our user base, it's really diverse. We really do have socially isolated elderly yeah. people who have an iPad, who have figured out how to use the app, and who are engaging fully. Mm. And we also have, you know, sort of young millennial students who are broke and are willing to, you know, use their bus pass to go get, you know, whatever leftover you've got to, that they might appreciate. Absolutely. So
I also think that model of Airbnb, you know, where people are actually in a way policing the system, because if you do have a bad experience or somebody does treat you badly, everybody else is going to know about it.
Yep.
And I think that's the same. You know, that is the wonderful thing about this sort of social new
their community social apps.
In a way, they are self-policing, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Because you're not going to get away with it because everybody's going to know and they're going to expose you.
Absolutely. And we're going to see this more and more and more in lots of different fields, you know, from you've got Uber and Airbnb and people like that already. Mm. But it's going to come along more and more and more, despite what the politicians try to stop it. The fact is we're going to have a sharing society and that's where people want to head towards. And if you look at the trends in recycling, upcycling, they're massive now.
Mm.
And it's gone beyond the hippie element. It is really mainstream. You know,
it's absolutely ingrained on generations that are coming through, I think. And because you don't want to see waste, do you? You just don't want to see it. It's a bit criminal, really.
It's really surprising. My eldest son, for instance, he rocked up the other day wearing a really nice jacket. And my youngest son and I both went, wow, that's really cool. Where'd you get that? And he said, I made it.
He went
to a shop. There's a shop in Canterbury called Revivals, which is a vintage clothing shop, what we used to call a secondhand shop. Yeah. And he bought a jacket and he took the sleeves off and added new sleeves and he put a new lapel on it and different pockets.
Good for him.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, he made this really super jacket. And then people were going, well, can you make me one? And he said, well, if you can find another base, I can make you something similar. You know, and likewise in Fruitworks, which is the place we own over in Canterbury, Jamie makes all the furniture and he makes it out of planks and pallets and stuff like that. So that whole trend is moving, isn't it?
So I know, Sasha, that you've been on BBC Radio and ITV News, and of course the pinnacle of it is being here, obviously, goes without saying, and meeting Paul.
Yeah.
So how's it going? You're getting the word out there? Is it sort of beginning to take hold as much as you want?
Obviously, it could always be growing faster, but the truth is that it's quite overwhelming in a positive way how quickly we've grown. So we launched our pilot in North London, a very small corner of North London, only a couple square miles, in July of 2015, so 18 months ago. And we did spend about 6 months just proving that we could make it work within one constrained geographic area.
Yeah.
And we had so many people hearing about us from outside of North London that much earlier than anticipated, like almost a year earlier than anticipated, we opened up the app to all of the UK a year ago. And then actually now it's global. And we've seen people use the app in, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's 35 or 36 countries now.
Wow.
Okay.
And through the press that we've received, which is really fantastic in terms of letting people know about us through the press, social media. It's just driven downloads. And then the key element I haven't mentioned is our volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had over 8,100 people reach out to us and ask, how can I build a food sharing network in my own community? And they don't all result in sort of activated volunteers, but a very significant portion of them do. And there's sort of two type of activities they do. One of them we call one of our volunteer sets are called ambassadors, and they take flyers and posters and letters for their neighbors. They basically sign up their neighborhood and get things rolling. And then we have a different set of volunteers called Food Waste Heroes. You mentioned that we also work with shops and cafes.
Yes.
So our Food Waste Heroes, this is a model that we are like so excited about, and it's a huge focus for us in 2017. But they're volunteers who are put into what we call a squad, and they're assigned to a food retailer. And the food retailer, even if they have charitable arrangements in place, has food that remains unsold at the end of the day. It's just for food retailers, they do not want to have empty shelves. They stock, they bake, or they prepare to have full shelves because that's what's attractive to customers. And sadly, they have a lot of food that's not fit or that can't be collected by charities. And this is where our Food Waste Heroes come in. They go and they collect the unsold food.
Right, okay.
They live near the shop. They take it straight home. They add it to the app, and then it's redistributed to their immediate neighbors. So
So in a way, if somebody's really passionate about this, mm-hmm. It's not about the app so much. Is that somebody really wants to do something about it? What you're allowing them is the infrastructure and the platform and the technology to then go and drive that themselves, which is a really good model, isn't it?
And all the time listening to Sasha talk about this, I kept thinking of different things you could do as groups of people clustered around the app as a platform, as a delivery mechanism, and how you could reconfigure it in different ways. I'd like to ask a question, if I may, and you can tell me to mind my own business.
Tell him to mind his own business, Sasha.
No, I wasn't going to ask her that. how do you monetize this? How do you make a living out of it, or do you not?
It's an excellent question, Paul. And it's a bit of a delicate one to answer. The answer right now is that we don't make any money.
Yeah.
And one thing I can say is the app will always stay free, free to download. That's in our interest. We have been really lucky in that we found a group of investors who buy into our long-term vision, which is for millions of hyperlocal food sharing networks all around the world. And what they see is that we're solving a problem that needs to be solved within our lifetime. But they also see an opportunity because the global annual value of food waste is $1 trillion.
Right.
So if we can figure out a way to just capture a tiniest portion of that on a platform that's very scalable, as you just said, then there are a lot of proven ways to monetize. But just coming back to sort of our immediate plans, everything on the app right now is for free. You can set a charitable donation, but it's an offline transaction that takes place between neighbors. And we're in the middle of integrating sort of seamless ability to collect money for charity when you add items. So if you have a higher value product, like maybe someone gave you some caviar, and I say that, but we've had lots of caviar added to the app, or black truffle oil.
On there now. Straight on there.
Some really like high value items. Hopefully. You might not just want to give it away to the first person who asks. You might want to raise some money for a cause that you care about.
Sure.
So you could set a charitable donation amount. And then we will retain a portion of the proceeds to support our operating costs. So that's sort of one of our plans.
I mean, I think for me, if I was you know, a council and all that sort of stuff, I would as a public sector person be looking at how I could leverage that platform.
Absolutely.
Parish council or district council level.
And there's all kinds of corporate social responsibility in the food marketplace that needs to look at this kind of thing as well and to utilise it in their own thing. So I get that. I get that.
Paul, we're running out of time. I want to speak about this for ages.
Yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it? Really running out of time.
I just want to say, please do download the app.
Yeah.
And if you don't see anything near you, then it takes two to share. So add something, look in your cupboards, add something.
Set something up. So presumably you just go on the normal stuff. You normally just go on App Store or any of that. And
Google
it's
Play.
Olio, and it's spelled OLIO.
Absolutely.
Download it. I'm going to have a really good play with that. And actually, if you know you've got older people in your community, you know, maybe, and you do want to do something voluntary, maybe that's giving you a good platform to do it.
Yep, just look on our website.
Yeah, brilliant, Sasha. Really, really like that, don't you?
Fantastic, yeah.
So, God, running out of time.
We're right at the end of the show.
Yeah, so just to recap then, it was really great to speak to Troy Linton earlier on Coco Shot. So if you're on Gatorade or Lucozade, maybe check out Coco Shot at Holland & Barrett. And really good to speak to Adrian. Some great advice there, the guy from Selfridges, about how you get yourself into high-end supermarkets like Selfridges as opposed to, you know, on the normal listing. So if you're a food producer, he offered some really good advice. And as you said, vacuum packaging is out for him. So maybe you might wish to reconsider that if you've got that. And really, really lovely to have Sasha.
Thank
Celestial
you.
One. Yeah, Olio. Really good. I'm going to have a good look at that. I think it's a great community
fantastic.
Asset.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
Great community asset. And maybe we can have you back in 6 months and we can have a little update of how it's gone.
Absolutely.
It would be a pleasure. Thank you.
Great. Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm going to hand over to you, Paul.
That was great. And another packed show with some fantastic stuff. I really love what you're doing, Sasha. Fantastic stuff. But that's the end of another show for another week here on the Food Talk Show. Do remember to look at the website. There's loads of recipes, blogs, and all kinds of things on there and past shows.
I think we've got 80 podcasts up there now.
Listen to some podcasts.
We've got a really good search function. So if there's something you're looking for, just put it in the search function. It will come up.
That's foodtalk.co.uk. So do check that out. But we'll be back with you next Thursday at 4 p.m. with another Food Talk show. In the meantime, have a fabulous week. Bye for now.
Bye.